The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up, electro-focused Crystal Fighters tell us about their Basque country connections and why they just love 80s Spanish pop.
In a time after sort of Franco had fallen in 76, you know, there was a sort of real feeling throughout Spain of like freedom, so we really sort of look to that and associate with that when we're trying to create our music.
Singles Club features James Blake, The Vaccines and Warpaint, and the feature with No Name is back. This time we'll be remembering Portland band The Wipers, about whom I know very little, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. Rosie Swash is here as per usual.
Hello.
Hello you, how you doing?
I'm all right. I've got a dilemma and it's like the most indie dilemma in the world.
What is it?
There are three bands playing on one night, and all of whom I want to see.
Who are they?
Well, one of them, a Clinic.
Right.
The other is Warpaint, who we're going to talk about in Singles Club.
Uh-huh.
And the third is Swans.
I am going to see Swans in Brighton.
You were viewing it?
I might be. I'm going with my mate Joe, who's like my oldest and dearest friend from school, and he is such a big Swans fan. He's travelling from Cheltenham.
Wow.
To worship at the feet of Michael Gearer. Also with me is editor of Guardian Film and Music, Michael Hand. Michael, do you have any opinions about the Swans?
I wouldn't go and see the Swans myself. But maybe that's just perennial fear of the 25 years ago era when they used to play so loud that people would throw up in front of the stage.
See, Elton Safey doesn't allow that anymore.
No, oh. It'd be rubbish. Imagine quite a Swans gig.
Yeah. It used to be this competition, didn't it, between the Butthole Surfers and the Swans to see who could be the most physically disturbing live band in the world.
I saw the Butthole Surfers.
Was that when they had the film with the penis amputations
and
everything?
It wasn't penis amputation, it was penis reconstruction.
Oh, well, that's fine
then. Somebody had his penis chopped open, being stitched back up again. But I think they used to show it backwards. Oh, it was horrible, man. I was really young. I mean, the red and green strobes going on and off, and some woman with a knockers out dancing. I was appalling. But, you know, something to tell the grandkids about. We like to make full use of you, Michael, when you come into the podcast.
not in the Butthole Surfers sense.
In the Butthole Surfers sense. No. You'll be talking to us about the Wipers later on.
I certainly hope so.
Intrigue, because they're sort of a band that always lurked around. I guess sort of American indie rock in the late 80s, early 90s, but I never actually heard. So I'm really keen to talk to you about them and maybe find out a little more. But first up today, we're talking Crystal Fighters. The East Londoners make high-tempo dance music by mixing traditional Basque folk songs with electronic instruments. The concept of the band and their name also derive from Basque history, as does the title of the new album, Star of Love. We can hear Rosie finding out more about the Basque obsession. Are they Basque?
Two of them are. Five of them. Two are from England, one is from New York, and the other two are Basque, living in New York.
Okay, we can find out more about the Basque obsession from singer Sebastian Pringle.
He's the Basque one.
Is he?
No.
he doesn't sound very Basque, does he? Sebastian Pringle shortly, but first let's have a quick burst from the album. This is Follow.
Could you please begin by explaining to me the influence of Basque opera, or a particular Basque opera that inspired the inception of your band?
One of the singers who we work with on the album, called Laura, who introduced us to the sort of idea, because her grandfather left a bunch of journals of his to her after he died, and one of them was this unfinished sort of opera of sorts, like a collection of like poetry and ideas for songs for a sort of larger piece, which he never sort of got to realise. So we started writing based on the ideas in there, like suggestions of like old melodies and instruments such as the chalaparta, which is like this wooden blocks played by two people, and various different flutes and drums and stuff, and started mixing it with the production music we were doing, and it sort of struck a chord with us, and so we carried on.
So could you condense for an ignoramus like myself, yeah, a little bit about Basque culture and some of the stuff we talked about. I know nothing about Basque culture.
Right. well, it's given a bad rep in the news because of the political issues, ETA, etc. But there's a large proportion of Basque culture that has very little to do with that. And in fact, many of the bands that maybe we're going to talk about in a bit that have influenced us from the 80s, like later than we're influenced by generally, are very much like anti the politics, anti the police state that as they saw it sort of thing. In fact, one of the albums by this band, Escorbuto, is called Anti Todo, which is sort of anti everything, kind of like a sort of punk attitude. Mm. But in a time after sort of Franco had fallen in 76 in Spain, you know, there was a sort of real feeling throughout Spain of like freedom. So we really sort of look to that and associate with that when we're trying to create our music. That's not really a potted history of Basque culture.
maybe you guys
should look online for that. But yeah. I suppose we have a slightly odd approach.
And the grandfather who left the ideas that became the seeds of Crystal Fighters. Also, that's where the name comes from. Read in him.
That and Star of Love, the name down. These are sort of rough translations from this opera, which contained lots of Spanish and Basque and English even in the book. He was like a well-traveled man, but from Navarra, which is an area where there is a less sort of stronghold, Basque stronghold. It's more of a cosmopolitan sort of area, and as he was, like, a cosmopolitan gentleman, so we're here.
And one of the things that our listeners are going to be able to hear is a mixtape that the Crystal Fighter put together.
Yeah.
It's Spanish pop.
Yeah.
Is that right? And it's more recent than some of the stuff we've just been talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose our influence originally was older classical Basque music, which features lots of like 200-man choirs of men and old like sort of strange melancholic melodies and stuff like that. But this music is from around 1983. Year of the Lord, and there's a sort of so-called golden age of Spanish pop, and like early synthesizers, and just their quite raw take on sort of American and English music, but sung it in Spanish for the most part. So we just found it really exciting because it's just people talk about like 80s German music and English music and American music all the time, but it's that there's a whole scene world going on in Spanish music, and it was at the time as well, sort of respected kind of around the world. So we just sort of trying to dig that up and show people how we discovered it and what we like about it.
We had to pick a couple of highlights from it to discuss.
Yeah, there's a band called Las Vulpes with a song called Me Gusta Ser Una Zorra, which means I want to be a witch or I want to be a whore. It's up for debate. But it's they only ever had one or possibly two singles, but they're from near Bilbao in the Basque Country, and it's an amazing, probably one of the best funk songs I've ever heard. So that's on there, and we'd like to play that for you. Also, a band called Gopes Bayos and a song called Fiesta de los Maniquíes, which is like a party of the mannequins, sort of possibly political song, but a beautiful sort of punky pop song. And then the last one would be an English spoken one by a band, another sort of one hit wonder, but a track called What Happens Now by a band called Vocoder, which you should check out the video online. It's got their sort of shopping for synthesizers around some 80s Spanish supermarket.
Wow. That was Sebastian Pringle of Crystal Fighters opening your mind, or certainly opening my mind, to the sound of 80s Spanish pop, yeah. About which I knew nothing. I know nothing.
We will have on the same page on the Guardian Music website that this podcast sits on a link so you can listen to that mix. It's about 40 minutes long, and we've also got the track listing. But I thought what he was saying is very interesting, because not speaking Spanish, I wouldn't know what any of that stuff was about.
Sure.
But it is quite interesting what he was saying about this kind of music existing or coming to life either under the shadow of Franco or after, the regime had collapsed.
I don't know anything about Spanish music beyond old... it sounds like I'm being facetious, but beyond Julio Iglesias, I don't really know.
But everything that we heard there, I think, sounds very relevant to the kind of stuff that's being recycled now, which, was, of course, about the advent of cheap musical technology and keyboards and synths and all that, and just making use of that. But it all sounds totally relevant years later.
Yeah, I guess we've come round to a point where... I mean, it's like that Cold Wave thing that we heard on how that happened. Sort of contemporary in some ways that sounded. Michael?
Alexis?
Are you a fan of this kind of thing? I mean, had you ever heard any Spanish 80s pop prior
to? I, in fact, possess an album by the Spanish band Duncan Du, who were briefly signed to Creation. But the album I have is not one that came out on Creation.
Wow, all right.
Oh, I'm such a hipster.
That's amazing.
I've not listened to it, I think, probably since the month I bought it in 1993.
1993, that was after they were signed to Croatia.
I was in a Spanish supermarket. It was reduced to
a few pesos.
Pesetas. I was in Spain, not Mexico.
Yes, of course. Sorry, geography never my strong point. A few pesetas anyway for a Duncan Du album. Crystal Fighters music, it does actually recontextualise it a bit, I think, hearing that stuff. Because I was sort of... I had kind of mixed feelings about the album.
Yeah.
And some of it I really liked, and some of it I found a slightly lumpy mix of sort of different styles that weren't kind of coagulating in the way I wanted. And yet, once you hear the kind of music that's influenced them, you sort of get it a bit more, which is an intriguing idea.
And also that they get this weird tome of information that this woman's grandfather left and that they found and got all the inspiration from. Because personally, another thing that put me off was I couldn't, in my mind... wasn't able or wasn't bothered to differentiate between them and all the millions of other Crystal bands.
Yeah, that's very true.
So I just sort of dismissed them and then actually they, we really took our name from this. And so at least it does lend a degree of context, which I think is needed in certain places. But I do think there's about 5 songs on this album, which are absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's pretty killer stuff. Michael, have you heard the album? Are you a fan?
I have to confess that I haven't heard
Thank
the
you
album.
Very much. Okay, moving on.
I'll get me stuff. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Don't come back.
Duncan did tell you that.
No, I was going to say. Well, perhaps you'd like to know, as you haven't heard the album, that Star of Love by Crystal Fighters is out now. So I suggest you go and listen to it.
I will come
back here, and report back and tell us what you think.
I'll send an email. I'll post on the thread.
Yes, please do. That'd be great. The Spanish pop mixtape that Sebastian Rose was talking about, as we said, can be found embedded on the webpage for this very podcast. If you're listening through iTunes, make sure you check out guardian.co.uk/musicweekly to get the mix. I've had a sort of scan through it, and it's wicked. It's really different. It's really interesting. Well worth a listen. Time for Singles Club. What have we got in store today, I wonder?
I thought you said at the beginning of the show what we had in store, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm just trying to build a bit of suspense.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Michael, I tell you what, you come on here, you haven't listened to the record.
I've ruined it all.
You pick holes in my amazing technique as a presenter. I tell you what, it's over.
Hey, Alexis, what have we got coming up on the show?
That's more like it.
Is it great stuff?
This track... first track was chosen by Michael. That was Wrecking Bar, Ra Ra Ra, by The Vaccines. That's Michael's choice. I have to confess, it's one of those situations where I appear to have sort of gone to the lavatory or something like that. And while I was in there, it's been decided that the vaccines are going to be huge. I came back out. I'd never heard of them. I came back out, and they're all over the cover of Enemy, the band you have to see, the vaccines, da-da-da-da-da-da. It's very indie.
The good thing about it is we heard virtually the entire single. Yeah, it's 84 seconds long.
Wow.
Which sets those of us of a certain age back to remembering Velocity Girl and things like that.
Yeah.
I went to see them last week at a gig that this very paper reported saw 200 people turned away.
Wow.
Throngs, frenzied throngs in North London to catch them. They played for 20 minutes and I thought, oh, they're quite a decent new wave group.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. The reason I picked this was I like the single. I think it's fine. Mm. I don't think it's the future of rock and roll. But the reason I picked it was because of the hysteria around this group. Mm. Well, let's just actually play them so some people can hear them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was taken aback by how workaday they seemed. I mean, I really was. I was expecting fireworks. It's all good stuff. I mean, I like songs that are built around the ADE chord progressions. That's what they do. It's all fine. But I presume that the hype and the hysteria is related to the fact that there are people who think they're going to make an awful lot of money for record executives, rather than people thinking this is the greatest new band in the world.
It strikes me as sounding not unlike a slightly sped up version of the Drums. And the Drums album, you know, with the best in the world, has not skyrocketed into the public.
That very thing was said actually after the gig last week. Someone said they sound like the Drums, don't they? And yeah, look how that ended up.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, I think the weird thing about the Drums is the guy from the Drums, the songwriter, has I discovered signed a separate songwriting deal, and he's writing for all sorts of weird people, like not Rihanna, but you know what I mean, people like that. He's doing pop stuff. He's writing a really good song on the Edwin Collins album. So maybe that's how they're going to make.
I think the vaccines are a lot better than the Drums. I've got to say that. Okay. I thought the Drums were one of the most underwhelming groups of the last few years, given the tidal wave of hype in which they arrived. But I think the vaccines. I think the biggest risk is that they'll be killed dead by the expectation that's being heaped upon what is fundamentally a promising and enjoyable, but not all that substantial yet, band.
Rosie, how do you feel about the vaccines?
Well, I don't have a problem with bands sounding a bit like the Ramones or a bit like the Jesus and Mary Chain, but I, like you, suddenly turned around and was like, hang on a second, everybody seems to be talking about this band. What have I missed? Mm. And actually, it's not impossible to miss a band emerging these days. In fact, it's much more possible than I'd say any other time.
Particularly if the song's only 84 seconds long.
Exactly. Easy to miss. But here's my issue with it. I feel like we're definitely being flogged something, and I think we're being flogged something. I believe they're on Columbia or about to be signed to Columbia.
Yeah, they've been signed to Columbia.
So there's a lot of, quite possibly a lot of marketing muscle behind it. I went on their blog, and there is this fashion for blogs of the last couple of years where you just have a lot of context and no actual real content. So lots of images of, you know, there's like on there one, there's like a picture of Lindsay Lohan in her bra, but then there's also clips of Minor Threat and Richard Hell and all these kind of nostalgic looking Ray-Ban styled adverts. But the blog itself virtually is only a couple of weeks old, and virtually all the pictures, all the posts on it were done on one day.
Right.
It just makes me feel like either someone at a label has said, this is what you do to give your band context and it's really cool, or the band themselves have decided. And also the guy in it is JJ Pistolet,
right,
which I actually thought was okay. Mm. It was not really a general consensus about JJ Pistolet being good, but I actually preferred that to this.
I think the thing you said about context thing is quite interesting and important here, because all the reference points that you're getting are, Jesus and Mary Chain meets the Beach Boys. And this is from people that they had one song available for most of the time this hysteria was developing. So all these reference points were being bandied about on the strength of one song. And then, as you say, you know, Richard Hell and what have you on their website, you go and see them, you don't think Richard Hell, Jesus and Mary Chain, the Beach Boys. You think, it's the members, they're going to do sound for the suburbs in a minute.
And also, it just feels like, why this band, who aren't doing anything that different from what a lot of other bands are doing, but when you examine it, it feels a little more contrived than what some of their contemporaries are doing. So why this band are getting this kind of...
I think they're being done a disservice. I like them well enough. I've commissioned a piece on them. I like them well enough.
not for the hype.
I like them well enough, but, you know... Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sheeple. Wake up, sheeple. okay. You talk power to the man.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you've been sold a pup. It's like what people write on the, you know.
Well done for falling for the corporate machine.
it's actually true. In this case, we formed the corporate machine. Look, that's enough. The vaccines. We've talked about them for 3 hours longer than their song goes on. Wrecking Bar.
You could have gone to the toilet.
I could have gone to the toilet, and I'd be none the wiser, frankly, when I came back as to why people dig this. But Wrecking Bar, Rah 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 by The Vaccines is out on November the 29th. And now let's listen to Rosie's Choice.
Like a map with no ocean, there's a limit to your love. Your love, your love, your love. There's a limit to your care. So carelessly there. Is it truth or dare? There's a limit to your care.
That was Limit to Your Love by James Blake. Rosie's yes. Choice. Rosie!
It's a cover of the Feist song, obviously. Mm-hmm. If you've heard the Feist song, you will know that. It's been hanging around for quite a while, but it's just been given a release date, which is why I picked it. And I feel we really should have talked about James Blake a little bit earlier.
We were too busy discussing the vaccine. Yeah. We were too busy falling for the corporate machine and discussing the vaccine.
The man was too busy.
Yeah,
anyway,
telling us what to do.
James Blake has a couple of things going for him. One is phenomenal voice. Mm. It's just so exquisite. It's got this real mercurial quality to it. I like the way he, you know, people have the capacity to use their voice like an instrument, and that's exactly what he does. And he's previously part of Mount Kimby.
Yeah,
he's often described as a, you know, post-dubstep producer. He did the CMYK thing earlier this year where he took the loop of a Khalees track caught out there and he kind of sampled and chopped it up and screwed it. Yeah, you're looking at me like you know.
Yeah, I do know. I do know.
Of course, yeah.
I don't spend my time listening to The Vaccines. another corporate pap. I'm really into that, you know, whatever it was you just said.
Exactly. I know.
Yeah, I know all about it. I was just bored.
Well, that was the track that got certain people's attention, and since then he's had, admittedly, the best thing he's done, I think, which was fairly recent, is a song called I Only Know What I Know Now, which puts his use of samples and space, puts it to the most beautiful use. But I think he's got the potential to be, I think he's extremely promising and very interesting, and I just can't see that he couldn't be popular with a voice like that.
But I think it's interesting because it's what we're talking about here is kind of the flip side of Katie on a Mission or whatever it's called.
Right, Katie on a Mission? Yes.
Yes, of course it is. I knew all about that. I like that when it was underground. but it's an attempt by people within the dubstep scene to find some sort of context for their very obvious, you know, immense talent as a producer, you know, but broadening out from making dubstep, which is, you know what I mean, is kind of a music that clearly isn't going to appeal beyond a certain, you know, bold line. And I think it's really interesting. I think it's a really interesting thing to do is try and combine the sort of piano, singer-songwritery kind of slightly Prince ballady kind of thing with those low-end frequencies, that kind of dubstep space.
I was reminded of Jamie Liddell when he made his move from being the crazed experimentalist to, right, now I'm going to try and make a breakthrough mainstream soul album. Mm. This is my favourite song off that Feist album, but it did sound a bit like one half expect them to, I'm going to undress you slowly, lady.
So listen,
what is it with, you know, experimental dance musicians who feel the need, they then need to do Bedroom My Soul?
I don't know, would you say that to Prince? Why do you feel the need? Look at you.
Go and have a cold shower, mate.
Go and run around the garden.
He had the bedroom eyes from the get-go, Alexis.
It starts off as you just think, well, this is just a bog-standard cover. It's not really doing anything different. But it progressively becomes a lot more about what he likes to do with negative space and samples, and it becomes a little bit more weird.
What I like to do with negative space.
When you say it like that, it's too sexy, Michael.
I'm going to take you to bed, negative space.
Thank you.
Guys.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting record. I'd be intrigued to see if it goes off from here. He's got a great voice. It fits in with my love of smooth music. Limit to Your Love by James Blake is out November the 8th on Atlas Records. And this is my choice for Singles Club. That was Undertow from Warpaint, a newly signed to Rough Trade, all-girl band, described by somebody, an A&R man that I spoke to was, yeah, they're like the Foxy Fleet Foxes, which is the kind of, yeah, exactly, boke. It's the kind of male chauvinist piggery that I hope is... I would have thought it had been stamped out of this business. I really like it.
I can't believe it still exists. It's
absolutely remarkable. Anyway, I really like that record. I think it's kind of mysterious and strange. It sort of wafted over me the first time I heard it when I got the CD through. And then I heard it on the radio and my ears really, really pricked up. I thought, oh, what's this? This is good. And went back to the album. I think it's rather good. Michael, do you think it's any good?
I think if you were unrelentingly cynical, you'd say, congratulations, America. You now have your all-woman XX.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
But it's lovely. It is lovely. Mm. I'm not going to quibble with that for a moment. I could listen to that all day and all night.
You'd get sick of it if you did that, though.
Yeah, eventually. But I'm just one day and one night.
Yeah. I'd never listen to it again as long as I lived. Rosie, how long would you listen to it for?
Oh, well, I have been listening to them for months now.
Of course, yeah. See, I haven't because I was too busy listening to like loads of dubstep.
Didn't you introduce them to James Blake, Rosie?
Exactly. Yeah, I put that all together. I really, really like Warpaint. They remind me of... I mean, I think Michael makes a good point with the XX because it's a similar sound in many ways, but there's the kind of pureness and sweetness of it, which almost pushes it to the point of something weird, is something that Au Revoir Simone do.
Absolutely, very good comparison. Band,
and the use of vocals is very similar. They're part, they resemble, there's quite a lot of that kind of beachcombed stoner feel to Best Coast and to a lesser degree, I guess, or Summer Camp and stuff like that. It all falls in the same mold, but I think they've got the songs. There's a song called Crimson that they did a while ago. I think it was on their old EP because they've been around for about 6 years, but their debut album is only just going to be out next year.
They said it was kind of performance art type thing, weren't they? And they finally started.
I love the way that both of you, as you said, performance art.
It's just putting out.
That was actual performance art.
But I think they're great.
Yeah, I really like them. It's the kind of thing that you could see taking off as well. Not that that matters, you know, but it's.
They won't take off like the vaccines.
No one will take it.
Not now they've got the might of the media that's been hoodwinked into believing that they've probably been paid to say the next big thing. Undertow by Warpaint is the first track from the forthcoming album, The Fool. It is also a free download from the Rough Trade website, so you can get that for now. Go and download it. Your comments now on last week's show on the one or two expletives which may have been heard. Barry Beatmaster writes, swearing isn't big or, for that matter, clever. Mkay. Yet neither is saying mkay. I'm sorry, I've got a real, real objection to the word mkay.
Methinks.
It is a bit methinks, isn't it? But Barry's making a point. What happened to the good old days when the likes of Chris Morris would disguise swearing cleverly, e.g. furcu or motherfarkus?
That's very subtle.
Kebabet writes, a very good pod this week. Kanye's new song sounded like it was sung by the Family Guy posh character with a massive underbite, and yet was good. As was Sufjan and Jamie of the XX, but the cream of the crop was Vince Clarke. Interesting. Your mention of Synth Britannia led me to spend Sunday watching it, and Vince again came across as the most ardent musicophile, if that's a word, most ardent musicophile possible. Lovely. On Jamie XX, Ellie Moose reckons Jamie's, in inverted commas, production of the XX's album makes it, for me, pretty exposure-proof. He simply doesn't leave anything there to get irritated by. Contrary to Sufjan, shove it in Stevens. Yeah, that's what the ladies call it. What crap?
It's just the new gender, alt porn folk or something.
That's amazing. Sufjan, Shove It in, Steve. I will never, ever.
That's not it's the title of his next album.
Sufjan, Shove It in, Steve. Yeah, it's. I will never be able to look Sufjan Stevens in the eye again without thinking, there's old Shove It in. Thanks again for all your comments. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave them. Feature with No Name is back. Michael is going to be telling us about Portland punk band The Wipers, Greg Sage and The Wipers, and why they're so special. But let's start off by listening to the first single. Recorded in 1978, this is Better Off Dead. So, Michael, that's The Wipers, their frontman Greg Sage with Better Off Dead from 1978. I'm quite intrigued by that, because that isn't your straight-ahead sort of ram-a-lamma punk record at all. It's a bit like Wire or something like that.
No, I think this is the interesting thing. I mean, The Wipers is Greg Sage to all intents and purposes. There was a rolling lineup behind him for most of their career. And in Portland, Oregon, you're a long way from where punk is happening. Mm. You're not in London, you're not in New York, you're not even in Los Angeles. And so I guess, you know, if you have that sense of isolation, you have to construct your own idea of what something is. So you're using punk for the freedoms it opens up, rather than just for, right, I'm going to sound like the Dead Boys.
Yeah.
Because they authentically don't sound like the Dead Boys at any point. I mean, that's... The first single is probably the most straight-head punk thing, in the sense that, you know, it is a bit ram-a-lama. But there's a drone going through it, which I think is one of the big things. That's one of the big things, I think, that happened in the Wipers music, especially as you went on through the career. To me, it always sounds like it sounds like driving on big empty roads at night, which is what the Pacific Northwest, where they're from, is like. It's big empty roads with not a lot of traffic around. They never really seem to have any impact over here, because like you, they're a name that meant I knew the name when I was growing up, but little more. And I first heard them. It was the year I got married on honeymoon. I picked up a cassette, The Best of the Wipers, in Wuck Street Records in Athens, Georgia, where Peter Buck used to work.
Okay.
He wasn't working that day. Left a note for me.
Probably heard you were coming.
And I listened to this record driving around America for, you know, most of the next 3 weeks, and I found it quite extraordinary. It's haunting and it's melancholy, and it is, as you say, like Wire, completely divorced from what we think of as normal punk. But Sage himself, a very interesting, unusual character. He claimed to have had a record-cutting lathe when he was 7 years old.
Right.
And would record songs off the radio and cut his own versions of these singles for his friends. And he was always fascinated by the process of music and of independence. You know, having your own record-cutting lathe, I suppose, does make you think, well, setting up my own label, how hard can that be? And he never wanted the Wipers to play live. I don't think they really played any significant gigs until the mid-80s.
A long time after that single, then.
That's right. He wanted people to hear the music and use their own imaginations. I mean, I think, and that's a very punk thing as well. You know, use your own imagination. Find what you want in this music. Don't let me dictate to you what it's about.
This is fascinating. Let's hear another track. This is called Is This Real? It's from the album Is This Real? Which was their debut album, I'm right in thinking, which was recorded in 1980. Again, interesting. Obviously, a fairly major development. I think you would agree, Rosie, from the first track that we heard.
Yes.
Who have the Wipers influenced? I mean, Nirvana, I think.
Nirvana covered two of their songs, Return of the Rat and D7. And you know, there was a tribute album. But I think their greatest influence probably lies in the kind of proud regionalism that they had. Mm. You know, we are a Pacific Northwest band. We are not moving to Los Angeles or New York to try and make a name for ourselves. This is where we live. This is where we make music. You know, Greg Sage set up his own record label, Trap Records, to try and bring together what other punk bands there were in Portland to give them an outlet. And I would imagine, I mean, Kurt Cobain said that was a huge inspiration to the bands in Seattle, you know, a couple hundred miles further north, you know, 10 or so years later. But it's that album, Is This Real? I mean, John Peel apparently said it was one of his 20 favourite albums of all time, which, having read that quote, leaves me slightly baffled as to how I could have gone through the 80s without ever hearing them.
Yeah, that's what I didn't either. No, not at all, no.
It's kind of like, it was almost like a hidden gift, finally hearing for the first time. And I think it's the individualism as well that must have appealed to people like Kurt Cobain, because Greg Sage is ploughing only his own path. He's not interested in anything anyone else has to do. I mean, the music feels so focused and single-minded and driven that it's almost like it's a paradigm of independent music.
This is great. I'm really enjoying hearing this stuff. I've been listening to a lot of American punk recently because I've been listening to John Savage's compilation.
Yeah, I put that on the car the other day. My wife made me take it off within 20 seconds.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you get to Black Randy in the Metro screen, schools and hospitals make me sick. I'd rather stand here and sell my dick. It's like, but it's an intriguing listen because I think you do sort of realise that you get, I think it tends to get overlooked a little bit. You know, we talk a lot about British post-punk, and we talk a lot about how, you know, by 1978, there's all these kind of bands trying to do different things, and punk was an open door. Punk was just the sound of a door opening, rather. And you really get a sense in that compilation that at the same time, the people in America were trying to do something different with the punk template. Same goes for Greg Sage.
Well, I think what's interesting in America is that all over the country you've got these different scenes interpreting what punk offered in
Cleveland,
completely different ways. In the Midwest you had hardcore. In Washington, D.C. you got straight edge. In L.A. you got that real shock punk, you know, from the Weirdos and Derby Crash and the Germs and Black Flag. And in Portland, you're getting something different entirely, which sounds to me, you know, a very ascetic view of what punk is.
We're going to talk, I'll just go whether Rosie likes any of this in a minute. But let's hear a final track from them. This is Romeo from the album Over the Edge.
Romeo, he cruised the streets at night, and under his feet lay all the remains of all the cruisers before him. But out of the alley, came these green laser eyes, sank closer. Still alone. Oh, Romeo. Romeo. Romeo, Rome.
Right, that was Romeo from the album Over the Edge, released by the Wipers in 1983. I really like that.
I think that's an extraordinary song. Yeah. A really extraordinary song.
A little bit of Frankie Teardrop by Suicide in there, I thought.
It combines Suicide, it has the Metoric thing going, and then those extraordinarily huge guitar lines that, I'm sorry to come back to the landscape, but it does sound like landscape. I mean, it sounds like almost a storm breaking over the plains or something. I'm going to be a bit rock critic here.
Finger on chin.
You appear to be digging that too.
Yes, Rosie. Very much so. Particularly the last track, I thought was excellent. I didn't know anything about them before Michael said he was going to choose them for a feature with no name. So I had a very cursory look around. I had heard of them in relation to Kurt Cobain being a fan. These guys, the Vaselines.
I was going to say, you can't ever take Kurt Cobain's recommendation.
Exactly. It was like, there was these bands that...
The Melvins.
That was the extent of my knowledge about them. And I'm quite interested in the idea that he really wanted to keep it insular, because it's just so at odds with, like, particularly this last year in music, where it just feels like music videos are the focal point for so much of pop, and perhaps to the detriment of the actual quality of the music. And to it'd be nice to think that it might be pushed so far that it would turn back in on itself and people would start trying to be completely identityless.
Well, Greg Sage, he continues to punt out. The Wipers went until 1999. He still makes music. He moved to Arizona and he set up a record label called Xeno, which basically tends to the Wipers' back catalogue insofar as it can. But I was looking on the website for that earlier today, and it's a deeply unhelpful website. we're not doing biographical information. We're not doing any easy-to-follow discography. Right. You know, if you want to buy my stuff, it's here. But I'm not offering you a lot more help than that.
He doesn't do interviews.
I don't think he does, really. Maybe, but, you know, none came up very high on the Google search.
Well, look, it's all fascinating stuff, I think. I'm sure you'll agree if you're listening. That's your lot for the Wipers feature with no name. Thanks very much for coming in today, Michael.
It's a pleasure.
And, always a pleasure to see you. And thanks also to Rosie.
You're very welcome.
My thanks, as ever, to our producer, Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis. See you next time. Bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.